Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, what is going on? The whole world. This is interesting. We've got all kinds of things happening all over our planet. And of course, things that happen overseas affect us here, and things that we do here affect folks overseas. And one of the big topics, of course, is the global economy and our economy and politics. And so I've been following an expert who has made a number of contributions to the conversation and weighed in with his expertise on a lot of different subjects. One of them is, of course, inflation, which is on a lot of people's minds, or deflation, depending on what part of the world we're talking about. The gentleman's name is Leo Haviland, and he has written the book Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And he's recently written about the Fed, Chairman Yellen, and also about an essay on inflation and deflation. So he's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, and he's been featured in a lot of different places. Very, very well regarded. Leo Haviland, ladies and gentlemen, is here. Leo, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you for having me on your excellent show. It's an honor to be your guest.
Well, it is our privilege, and I appreciate your time, so I'm going to dive right in. I'd love to, you know, I have to confess, Leo, I'd like to get about 4 hours of your time. Just have you download a lot of what you know about these subjects to me, but we're going to do it inside of a half hour today. So let's start with this, okay? From what I read, and again, I'm a financial planner. I work with people's money and try to advise them the best I can every single day. What I read is that there are pockets of inflation around the world, but there's also areas around that are experiencing or could be experiencing deflation. So there's two kind of topics I wanted to make sure we got to. The first is, of course, here at home in the United States, we've been doing the expansion of our monetary supply. We've had the creation of money, quote unquote, out of thin air by the Fed, and use that money in part to buy our own bonds we've been issuing to the, and buying at current pace is $55 billion a month, as high as $85 billion during the height of the QE. So the first question, which is, this is a big setup, but the first question is this going to trigger inflation? And if so, how quickly? How big? Those are the questions I know that weigh on a lot of people's minds, because it affects some of their decisions and how they plan their future.
An excellent question, David, and you've raised several intertwined issues. The appearance of inflation or deflation of a substantial amount on a worldwide basis is not likely to occur anytime in the next, say, 6 months or a year. However, to focus on America for a moment,
sure,
the Federal Reserve is absolutely determined to create what it deems is sufficient inflation of 2%, and their money printing extravaganza, which has been seconded by the United Kingdom, raised to a higher level by Japan, and with Europe possibly waiting in the wings at some point to do it, within the next 2 or 3 years, I suspect at least 2% inflation in America and probably Europe a bit behind should appear.
Okay.
There's so much of a commitment, David, to create inflation that the deflationary forces, as real as they are, probably won't result in significant deflation anywhere.
Well, and I think that a key mention here on that is because, you know, people worry about inflation. It's something that they, of course, have a lot more experience with because, you know, for the last 50 years, we've had pretty much, I think it was 49 out of 50. There was only 1 year when we had a smidgen of deflation, which was in 2009. It was like 1/3 of 1%. hardly significant deflation. But for my listeners, Leo, deflation, even though they may not be as familiar with it, can be a very bad thing.
Depending on your audience, David, the persons who like inflation mm-hmm. tend to be the debtors.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve has embarked on a cheat-the-saver policy via repression of the federal funds rate and thereby a fair amount of the government yield curve, so that those who are savers or creditors are, in effect, being paid back with less valuable currency, whereas, of course, the debtors of the world on balance like inflation because it makes their debts less burdensome to them. So if you have savers, as Japan would be an example, they like a little bit of deflation.
Okay. Fair enough. So it depends on where you sit. So I read a report recently that the ECB, that's the European Central Bank?
Yes, sir.
That they are weighing some of these measures that have been used by other countries like the United States and the others you mentioned to stave off some deflation that they are perceiving as a greater risk.
That's correct. It seems that the tea leaves argue that in addition to their deflation concern, they're against having the euro move much above 140, because that will tend to increase either deflationary forces or reduce inflationary ones. They also probably would resort to negative interest rates, whereby persons with funds, like the banks, would, to deposit funds at the ECB, would in effect have to pay money to do so. They'll probably do that, the negative interest rates, or await a big move over 140 should it happen before they did quantitative easing. But that's just one person's opinion.
Okay, well, but it's a good one, and it's helpful. If you're just joining us, Leo Haviland is our guest. He has made a lot of contributions, including the book Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Welcome back. We have Leo Haviland on the line with us, and he is an author and an expert on a lot of topics. And I know he'll say I'm being too generous, but I have read a lot of his work, and I am right on the money with that. And speaking of money, Leo, I've got a number for you. Let me pull it up here. $17,566 billion in national debt for the United States. When does that come home to roost?
It could come to roost anytime creditors in general, particularly foreign ones, feel that the United States' ability to pay will be sufficiently compromised, or that should the dollar begin to weaken dramatically, say go down another 5% or more from current levels, that's when the debt will come home to roost. Many say, hey, the next couple of years, 2014, 2015, the budget deficit on a federal level won't be that bad.
Okay.
But even on an optimistic scenario, one has to underline that no one's talking about reducing the budget deficit. It gets worse depending on when you want to start the danger signs in the late 20-teens.
Okay.
So, anytime.
Anytime it could start to have an effect. Well, and you know, you're right, because the talk about budget deficits, and we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, the various parties or various persons stating, and you know, that hey, we're really excited because we're gonna make it so we're only having to borrow $500 billion this next year. We're real proud of that. That's some of what we're hearing. You know, that's what we hear. And I know it's laughable, and it's sad at the same time. And so you're right. I agree. And I think the interesting thing is how we are perceived, you know, and a lot, the thing about the value of the dollar, and I know you know this, Leo, and for our listeners, you know, I sometimes describe it as being kind of a two-part valuation. It's, you know, what it's worth versus other currencies. And I think that's part of what you're getting at with the devaluation versus the broad basket of currency. Basically, if our money becomes worth less versus everybody else, not just one currency like the euro. So we've got that, and that's where we have some issues if there's just less of a perception of stability and economic power or growth. And then the other is what it's worth to us inside the country, right? I mean, what we can buy with our dollars. Those two can be disconnected, right?
Excellent point, David. Particularly for persons who are on fixed incomes or moderate incomes or living off their savings, the erosion of their purchasing power has dreadful consequences.
Mm.
You can see that in everything from the poverty rate to those who ask questions about why the median incomes are staying unchanged for the past 10 to 15 years, and why such concern about inequality in America and elsewhere.
Mm. Good observation. So the risk with the debt, and again, an ability for us to quote-unquote get our financial house in order as a country and a people and a government, the erosion of the faith in that could lead really to others like foreign countries or foreign investors to shy away from our debt or to demand a higher interest rate than they're currently getting by buying our debt.
That's correct. To get a sense, David, of the overall national debt, federal, consumer, state government, at the end of 2013, it was 351% of nominal GDP, and that's down only slightly from 2009's 371%. And compare that, say, in what might be the good old days, if there were ever any good old days. In 1975, it was 155% of nominal GDP. And in the more thrifty post-World War II period, the low was about 129 to 130% of GDP. So the country has a culture of debt to which it's addicted. And unless it finds a means to generate income to pay back the debt, at some point, creditors, overseas or domestic, may become upset. We may not be Greece, but we're not so dramatically different from many highly indebted nations that one shouldn't raise the fine questions that you're doing.
Well, and you know, use the analogy, we may not be Greece, and my next thought was, we may not be Greece, but we might end up being like Spain or some of these, or Italy or some of these other countries where they're paying a lot more for interest costs than we are. You know, we're sitting at 10-year treasury at the time we're doing this program, Leo, as you know, is in the 2.75% range for somebody who gets a 10-year bond and holds it maturity. That's their effective yield. But, you know, the Italians and the Spaniards, you know, whether they in the 5-7 range?
It's maybe a bit less than that, but
okay.
Until recently, that's exactly where they were.
Okay. So it's that, and that has an enormous impact when you start jacking up the cost of borrowing for a country to fund it, the government and its operations. That really makes a huge difference.
You're absolutely right.
Well, if you're just joining us, Leo Haviland is saying some smart things that I'm agreeing with him, and he's confirming some things that I need to get straight in my head. So let's take a quick break and we'll rejoin. Stay right there.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Leo Haviland's on the line, and Leo and I have been talking about inflation and debt and things that we're concerned about. I want to get to a moment, if we could, Leo, your book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Tell me a little bit about the book, because I'm sure my listeners are going to want to understand more about, you know, what's going on, and I'm sure you can help them with your book. So give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what you try to accomplish with the book.
I try to give people on Main Street and Wall Street a new way of looking at stocks and other marketplaces. And the vision I write about is how Wall Street embraces language from familiar and fascinating fields, games, love, war, politics, science, and religion, plus American dream language and investment wordplay to attract and entertain and educate and persuade audiences, who are us,
sure,
to act and to go to Wall Street and stay there, and especially to buy stocks and bonds. So I study how people persuade.
Okay. So how we're persuaded, and so having this information can make us a more objective investor.
That's true.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. Because when we pay attention to how people are trying to persuade us, we're that much more conscious about their motives. And it offers us an opportunity to step back and sharpen our judgment and better assess our risk-taking actions and money-making interests.
That's excellent. Well, and on that point, Leo, that's a perfect segue for my next question is, Federal Reserve is, you know, they've been backing off of the bond buying. And for our listeners, if I've got this right, they were creating, literally, out of thin air, $85 billion a month and using that to buy our own debt being issued by our government. So left pocket buying it from the right pocket, sort of, so to speak. And so that's what it was. And now it's down. We've cut it back to $55 billion, but that's the economy of Greece on a monthly basis. So my first thing is they have this authority to literally create, and the balance sheet now, they've got some $4 trillion of bonds.
Yes, it's the balance sheet has grown by roughly 8 times where it was late, 2008.
All right. So the money was created. So this is a lot of money that wasn't in the system or wasn't created. Now it is. And so my question and what I'd like your comment on is, they've signaled, at least, that they're not obvious, but they've signaled they're going to continue to do this until the economy can kind of be on it, quote unquote, on its own, and taper off this bond buying, and then making adjustments as they see fit, either pausing or accelerating. Well, I guess my first question is, do you think that's going to work? Will they be able to wean off the country off of this stimulus that is created with the bond buying? Will they be able to wean us off of that?
At the end of the day, the creation of monopoly money, as in the game, is likely to do nothing more than maybe boost short-term confidence. The underlying ability to create real sustainable economic growth by this extravagant money printing is an illusion. In my opinion. Of course,
okay,
the Fed doesn't believe it, and they're certainly selling to its audiences that what they're doing is going to help recovery. So when they quit the quantitative easing,
right,
what we've seen in the end of QE1 and after the end of money printing 2 is the stock market went down, which makes you wonder when they finish or get well underway in this tapering, what that will do to the stock marketplace here, the S&P 500 and so forth. And the action of the S&P is suggestive that the economy will not rally very much going forward. And even if the economy manages to struggle forward, one has to ask, how much real growth have these people done, or are they just buying time? Or buying hope?
That's a fair question. And we still are looking at, I went to the U.S., one of my favorite websites, unfortunately, is usdebtclock.org, and I can get a running number in U.S. Debt. Let me see if I got the right order. Yeah, $628 billion is the projected deficit So we still need, even if things get quote unquote better from a budgetary standpoint, we still need to borrow half a trillion or so. And if that's the case, when the Federal Reserve, and I may oversimplify this, Leo, correct me, but when the Federal Reserve stops buying those bonds that we're issuing to cover our debt, somebody else is going to need to step in and buy them. And I would argue they're not going to do it at 2.75% yield.
You're right. And for a fair amount of the yield curve, like the bills are under 0.1%, the two-year is less than 0.5%. You go out all the way out to 5 to 7 years, and you have no significant return relative to inflation of, let's call it, 1.5%. So on the short end of the yield curve, most people in the U.S. or overseas, unless they need these securities for collateral for some reason, are not going to buy it. And one may ask, to get back to the excellent point you raised about foreigners before, the buying of the Treasury bonds in this past calendar year, they were net sellers, which is not something that is going to please those who think that somehow the overseas people are going to come to the rescue.
Right, right. Well, it's very interesting, and it's something we need to really pay attention to. If you're just joining us, Leo Haviland's our guest. The book is Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back with Leo Haviland and the website, leohaviland.com. Leo, H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D.com, leohaviland.com. And Leo, I want to come back to my comment about if they stop, don't do another QE4 or whatever, when they taper off the $55 billion down to $45 or whatever they do, and they eventually get it to where it's zero, or as they get it to zero, some other people, when we maintain a deficit that runs $500 billion to $700 billion, whatever it is, and hopefully it will go down, I'm hoping it will, that they're still going to be, those bonds are still going to be purchased to fund our government, to pay the bills. And would you agree that we could see, a jump of, 1% or more in the cost of the 10-year treasury? In other words, the cost of financing our government could increase from 2.75% for those bonds to 3.75 or greater?
Easily.
Okay. And when that happens, and this is what I want to get to for our listeners, when that happens, that has not just an effect on the cost of financing our government, but that has a pervasive impact on the cost of borrowing in general. If you can get 2.75 is what you can earn on a government bond, then you're going to demand 4.75 or 5.75 for a corporate bond. So if the treasury bond goes up, so will the cost of borrowing for our corporations.
Excellent point. Yes, the action on the government yield curve is going to influence the corporate as well as various overseas rates as well.
And that can have then the trickle effect or the compound effect is that so the cost of financing expansion or existing debt or whatever a company may borrow for gets more expensive. That translates directly to, if nothing else changed, their profit will go down. Stock market price to earnings, okay, is a function of that profit. If it's not air, if it's real, it's based on the profit. So nothing changed but the cost of borrowing. Finance cost higher, less profit, stock price fall.
That's a great risk for the stock marketplace, particularly when experts such as you and others who I read say that after-tax earnings relative to, say, nominal GDP or other measures are towards the high side.
So this is something that we have to watch very closely. And Leo, I'm going to have you come back and help us tackle some more subjects because You are very insightful, and you can really help us. And I'll encourage my listeners to go to your website, leohaviland.com, and to check out the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And Leo, I thank you very much for your generous time with us today.
It's been an honor being on your program, David. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.